Before we hit record, welcome to Movie the Podcast. That's right, Movie the Podcast. Happy New Year. That's Happy right. New Us. No new, Sean
new
Marino
year.
Today.
No Sean Marino. I forgot all about that guy.
And yeah, starting a new format. We're doing the trickle down economics of movies. We are just gonna move
it's the
from movie to movie, from person to person. Much like the ghost or the demon from that movie with Denzel Washington.
Oh yeah, Fallen, wasn't that?
Yeah, yeah, we're gonna fall in it this year, and boy, did we fall in it with this first movie. We watched Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah,
we did. A movie that's just chock-a-block with options. It's a real Yggdrasil of branches that could go in any direction.
Yeah, I feel like Alec picked the movie with the most actors. There's like so many people in this movie, and like so many
good people,
so many people that like I didn't realize were in this movie. Like when Nathan Fillion shows up, I'm like, he's in this movie.
Cranston threw me off. Like Cranston standing there with one arm, I'm like,
yeah. Well, Cranston, I feel like Cranston before like Breaking Bad, like he was like a small character actor in like a million things. Like remember he was in John Carter, and we're like, that's Bryan Cranston.
Yeah, like Dennis Farina for a scene, Paul Giamatti for a scene, Ted Danson for a scene.
Yeah,
that guy from Alien Resurrection, whose name I can never remember, but he also banged that hooker with the penis.
Oh, Leland Orser.
Leon Orser for a scene. A damn good scene, might I add.
Also, did anybody else... I mean, I guess we'll get into it, but whatever. I thought that... And maybe it's just because Leland Orser always plays kind of like an underhanded guy. I thought that that scene was going to go a whole different way. Like, he was, like, incompetent or crashed on purpose or something. Like, I don't know. Just because I'm bringing
Leland Orser,
it all...
Leland Orser doesn't play underhanded. Leland Orser always plays just... tragic as hell.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
He has been put in a terrible situation. He got an alien put in him in Alien Resurrection. He was held at gunpoint to murder a hooker in Seven.
Yeah, he got it. Yeah, he had the razor blade dildo. Yeah,
his character is always sitting there going, "I don't. I did everything I could. I don't know what to do. Like I'm just like
he was. In,
he's
he was
he's
he
ill was, from the Simpsons
in Very Bad Things. Remember that?
Yeah.
Movie? Yeah, good movie. Anyway, we'll get into Saving Private Ryan. It is a very long movie, but I think the sad thing is I don't really think there's a whole lot to talk about.
I have things to discuss.
I there are problems I had with this movie that it's only because, you know, we're on a podcast and I have to think about things to talk about, but we'll get into it. What did you all watch this week? Alec.
I've only got two things, even though it's been a few weeks. One's still a Christmas-related movie. We watched Bad Santa, and that movie fucking rocks.
It holds up. I haven't watched
it. Holds up. That movie's honestly, that movie's even better. Because like you don't see movies like that anymore.
Because of woke.
I mean,
not no more.
But like,
no,
the movies.
I'm just kidding.
The movies. It's not like it's offensive, but it's not like racist. It's not misogynistic. He's just such. A gigantic piece of shit.
Right. The joke is
entire time.
Yeah. The joke is that he's a miserable piece of shit. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, that's the bit.
What's the name of the kid? His name's like Humphrey Mumphrey or Thurman Merman or
Thurman
something.
Merman.
Thurman.
Oh my Merman. God. That kid is so good.
Or he was bad, the Rizzler before the Rizzler.
Don't even put that on him. Fuck the Rizzler. Jesus Christ.
Oh, dude, how dare you talk about the Rizzler?
That whole family can go to hell.
Dude, not even that, the same family.
You're getting
it doesn't
five,
matter.
You're getting it's five all, big dooms for that.
It's all because of that idiot father who decided he wants to be famous. You know, he runs
his brother
like,
died. Five big booms.
he works for some small wrestling.
Yeah.
Independent, and he's like actually a wrestler. He knows how to like pro wrestle, but I guess that wasn't enough, so he decided to whore his kid out as the Costco guys.
Yeah,
ugh. And the Rizzler, Jesus Christ,
the Rizzler. I love the Rizzler.
Like, I'm not a small person. I'm pretty fat, but that kid is fat at like 7. He's gonna be like 900 pounds by the time he's 20.
Yeah. Oh yeah. If he makes it that long,
he's gonna be the video only kid in middle school with a lap band.
the boom kid calls him by his real name by accident.
Yeah, I've seen that.
It's so funny. And he's like, how dare you use my, looking like, how dare you use my real name? Like, dude, you're seven.
Yeah.
Stupid nickname.
Saddle
I'm the Rizzler, the Panther dress. That doesn't even make sense. That's two different comic universes. You fucking idiot.
Mm.
Anyway.
Take that, Rizzler.
We hate kids.
Yeah.
But what
Bad
else?
Santa. Very Bad Santa. Good movie.
Good, solid movie.
The sequel's good, too. I didn't rewatch that, but the sequel's a lot of fun as well.
I've never seen this sequel.
A Bad Santa 2, it's just as good as the first one. Maybe not quite as good, because you kind of know what's coming to an extent, and you're not shocked by the actual level of cussing and horribleness. So maybe not quite as good in that aspect, but it's still a lot of fun.
Is his love interest a Gilmore Girl in that movie?
And the first one is Lorelai, or the mother, whatever the mother is. I think that's Lorelai. I can't remember. The second one, the love interest is... I can't think of her name. The redhead, not Bryce Dallas Howard and not Jessica Chastain.
Amy Adams?
No.
No.
The one from Mad Men.
Oh.
Christina Hendricks?
Yes, I think so.
Wow.
I think that's right. She's the love interest in the second one. The other movie I watched was Juror Number 2.
Oh, yeah. That's the new Nicholas Hoult film.
New Clint Eastwood film, even though he needs to stop directing because he's 109 years old.
Yeah, I'm for Clint Eastwood stopping altogether. How was it? Because it's very divisive. Like, people either love it or hate it.
I thought it was, perfectly fine the whole way through. Like, it's not, I didn't think it was great. Mm-hmm. It's not bad. It's
perfectly crummy.
I don't know, probably a 6.5, maybe a 7. Like, it's a perfectly acceptable movie. But then, the very last scene is so fucking stupid. They should have just left it out and left you at the state you were in before that. And that brought it down a few points.
Mm.
It's almost like, I guess it's the opposite of the end of The Mist.
Right.
They show you more and it is awesome and wrecks you. And this one, they show you more and it just leaves you confused as to why they would have even shown it. It doesn't make sense. Like, the movie's not good enough that the last second, not twist, but the last scene, you're like, oh my God. It's like, yeah, okay. Like, that's stupid.
Right.
It's worth a watch. I don't think it was that long. And Nicholas Holt's good. Like, everybody's good in it. It's not a bad movie. Just the ending soured it for me.
I feel like
very, very, really the very, act. Very ending soured it for me. If they would have ended it without the very last scene, it would probably be in the 7 range.
Hmm.
But that last scene is enough to.
Damn, that's a bummer to go that long and fuck up.
Yeah. I don't want to spoil it, so I won't say anything more about it because it's a fairly new movie. That's it, Gogs.
I watched three things.
Ooh, damn. Gogs watched three things. That's wild.
All right. Well, one of them, two of them are repeats. So, I rewatched 2049, and we were talking about this on the Molly show. I did not like it the first time, but I have come around to just really just love that movie now. It is just I don't know if I could. It's long. It's long, but I don't know if there's a thing I would take out of it.
Any of the other? I was getting this guy's name wrong.
Any of know
Wong Kai War movies?
Oh, which movie did you say? Oh, I said 2049. Oh, I guess I watched four things actually.
Blade Runner. Oh, sorry. I've never mind. Continue.
Denis Villeneuve pretty good.
He said 2049, and I thought he meant 2046. The
one we watched on the show. Yeah.
Yes. Correct.
Blade Runner 2049. Baby Goose is amazing, and everyone's amazing in it. There's not a bad performance in the whole thing, and it's
here for you two guys. As far as sci-fi duologies go, which one's better, the Blade Runners or the Dunes?
Blade Runner.
Hmm.
I would say.
I don't know, because All of the Villeneuve stuff is really well. The original Blade Runner is really good. They're both tremendous. They're both like top tier. I just have such a love of the book for the first Dune book that I don't know. That's a tough one.
I mean, for me, it's Blade Runner because 2049 is so impressive, because 2049 really shouldn't exist, and in any other director's hands, it would have been totally shit. Whereas like Dune 1 and 2 are basically one movie. Like, you know what I mean? So that's why I give the nod to Blade Runner.
I mean, they're both, I mean, like, in like I will say this about Denis Villeneuve, like his use of scale in both Dune and in 2049 is something else. Los Angeles or whatever it is so massive and so like all encompassing. I don't know. And then just all the scale of everything in Dune is just off the charts, but both all bangers, straight bangers. I watched, I rewatched Donnie Brasco, a mob movie that I don't think gets enough credit. It's back when Johnny Depp had a little restraint and,
was he stumbling around acting drunk the whole time?
No, when he's the straight, when Johnny Depp is the straight man to a slightly unhinged Al Pacino, but the Al Pacino works. I don't know. I love that movie. The ending falls a little flat for me because it's based on a true story, but the movie itself is great. And Michael Madsen's that guy, menacing voice, love him. Which then leads me to the next movie I rewatched because I hadn't watched in a while, and I was texting TJ about it. Hateful Eight.
Oh,
good Lord, is that there's maybe 12 people in that movie. It's brilliant. Samuel Jackson, I don't know if it's his best movie because of recency bias, but it might be. Walton Goggins steals the show. Jennifer Jason Leigh is just insane. And when I was texting TJ, he's like, oh, it's just people sitting around talking for almost 3 hours. And he's right. It's super compelling. I'm just like, I mean, it's the whole goddamn time.
Kind of ridiculous, like how it's a one location movie, really not a whole lot happens, and it's still like it keeps your attention for that entire runtime. Like, it's kind of amazing. Like,
and I forgot C. Tates is in it. Like,
oh yeah, yeah.
And it's beautiful. It is just a beautiful fucking movie.
Yeah, it's really, really good. I don't know. I feel like I don't know. I think like that movie, I agree with you. I don't think that movie gets enough shine. I mean, it's like fucking, it's a masterpiece. It's really fucking good. I don't know if it's as good as Once Upon a Time in Hollywood for me, but it's like very, very good.
It's up there. The man, Tarantino, did it again. He done it again.
Yeah.
And the last thing I watched was new to me, but I believe TJ watched this previously and had spoke on it. So I probably should have better known better. But, I watched Malum.
Oh yeah, I hated that. Let me ask you a question. Have you ever seen Last Shift?
No.
Oh well, go back and watch Last Shift, and you'll be like, oh, this is way better. Because
this was a mess.
This is terrible. Well, go watch Last Shift. Last Shift is really good. Malum is a remake of Last Shift by the same director, and it's fucking terrible.
Somehow it made it worse.
With more money, it doesn't make it go. I'm telling you, dude, over this week, if you have time, watch Last Shift. It's on the Plex. It's excellent. It's great low-budget horror. It's a remake of what you just watched. You're going to be like, well, this is way better.
Some of the monster design and some of the effects were all right. But like the plot is just
the plot makes no sense. They add way too much shit. Go back and watch the first one, and you'll be like, "Well, this makes total sense, and this is way better." Yeah,
and in a post Long Legs world, it kind of wants to be Long Legs, and
this came out before Long Legs.
But I'm saying, like, now that we're in a post Long Legs world, I'm like, "Well, oh yeah, it's better."
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, I did not care for it. And it, I mean, it was like very derivative, very,
yeah, I hate it.
It's like Assault on Precinct 13 mixed with Prince of Darkness.
I can't imagine remaking a movie with the same director and they get a bigger budget.
The guy from
and they make
Funny
it worse.
Games do the same thing.
Yeah, but
neither of those movies were particularly good.
I mean, they're fine. I don't know. I've kind of warmed up to it over the years. But Michael Haneke is a very strange director. Like, him making it a shot-for-shot remake in English is kind of a meta-commentary on what the point of that film is in the first place. So, I don't know. He's a fucking weirdo. But if you want another example of a remake that's a shot-for-shot remake that makes no sense, Gus Van Sant made a Psycho remake that's literally just a shot-for-shot remake. It's like, okay.
Why? Was that the one with Crispin Glover?
No, it was with
Vince Vaughn.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, Crispin Glover, are you thinking of the remake of Willard?
Maybe that's
where he's the Rat King.
That movie rules.
Is it good?
The remake or the original?
Both, actually. I like them both.
I don't know if I've ever seen either. I'm just familiar with them just through
pop.
I like them both. The Crispin Glover one, actually, I think is a little better, but it's just because I like Crispin Glover so much.
Yeah, he's a good dude.
He needs to do more stuff.
He really does. He rocks.
That is everything I watch, TJ.
I just watched one thing. I watched a documentary on the Ramones called The End of the Century. It's really, really good. And I love the Ramones, but like I never realized how, like, so Johnny Ramone, the guitar player, he seems like the worst person in the world. He seems like this weird sort of like autistic narcissist asshole. Like, he just doesn't like anybody. He's super Republican. And I don't know, it's just really weird to like have, like, you know, one of the fundamental punk rock bands be founded by like a super right wing weirdo. Yeah,
that seems such opposing dichotomies.
Yeah. Was it always though, or did he evolve?
No. He's asked point blank in the interview, and he's like, "No, I was a right winger since birth." He was like boostering for fucking Nixon back in the fucking 60s or whatever. God, like,
imagine that. Imagine like back then.
Yeah,
like the Ramones, like the punk rock, like they're like the American punk rock staple.
I mean, like, you could really make the argument they are the first punk rock band. Like, they are, everything came out after them. I mean, they really are like the bedrock of punk rock.
See one of them stumping for Nixon. Like, wait a minute.
Yeah. Well, that and like,
makes sense.
Yeah. In the beginning of the movie, so they got inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame the year after Joey died, Joey, the lead singer. And in there, you know, I don't know if you guys have ever watched like Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, inauguration speeches or whatever they call that.
Induction.
Thank you. They always give like each member of the band like a little something to say, and fucking Johnny Ramone's like, "God bless the Ramones. God bless George W. Bush." It's like, oh my God.
Weird.
But, and also like, so like the movie's really interesting. Like, it's very well done. It's old. It's from like 2009, I think. Oh, but, wow. It's interesting because they're all dead now. Like, Johnny died, Dee Dee died. I think Marky is still alive, the drummer, but I think everybody else is dead. But the thing that's sad is like at the very end of it, you know, they're talking about Joey dying, and that's like really sad because Joey Ramone was only 49 years old when he died. He had like stomach cancer.
Oof.
And fucking Johnny, they're like, you get, because apparently Johnny and Joey broke, like they had like a long-standing grudge because they like Joey was dating a girl that ended up leaving him for Johnny, and then Johnny married him, and they literally like had a grudge for like 25, 30 years, something like this. And they're like, "Well, did you talk to Joey like on his deathbed?" And he's like, "No." He's like, I wouldn't want to treat somebody differently just because they died. Like, that doesn't seem right. And then they're like, "Well, how do you feel about it?" And he's like, "Well, I feel upset, but like, I don't know why." And it's like, what? And then he's like, "Well," he's like,
"Maybe you go to therapy, bro."
He's like, "I'm a fan of the Ramones, and Joey was in the Ramones, so I feel bad about that. But like, I don't feel bad about like anything else." It's like, bro, you are like fucked up. Cause like, you understand, these guys know you, like all those guys knew each other when they were like kids. Like, they all grew up with each other. It's like, I don't know, Johnny Ramone seemed like the worst person. Also, it's sad because like, the saddest and funniest part about the whole documentary is anytime they cut to Dee Dee, because Dee Dee is just like a fucking maniac junkie. And like he's talking about Marky Ramone, the drummer, and he also ended up being like a producer on a bunch of Ramone's albums. But he's like Johnny had like Marky, he was just a different guy, you know, like he'd go home and he'd fucking get some potatoes and he'd be making like French fried potatoes, and that's something for when you're 20 years old, you know. And you, instead of me going home and eating, I don't know, eating some fucking raw dough or something, it's like, what the fuck are you doing? And then like there's like a very short interlude, which should be a documentary all on its own, where Dee Dee Ramone made a rap album, which is amazing if you ever get a chance to listen to it. But like he's like Dee Dee Ramone's like he's like, you know, I know, like when I forget what rapper he mentions, but he's like, when he mentioned he gets a Gucci watch, I'm like, I understand what it's like to get a, you know, have no money and get a Gucci watch. He's like, I was like a Negro. You understand?
Oh my God.
Heavens.
But anyway, it's sad at the end because the movie ends with them accepting their Rock and Roll Hall of Fame award. And then they're at like the hotel. And Dee Dee looks like completely in outer space. And then they have like a credit, like a Chiron that shows up. And it's like, well, Dee Dee died 2 months after this was filmed of a heroin overdose. And it's just like, man, that's.
Did they mention performing at C. Montgomery Burns' birthday party?
No, I wish they did. They, you know, what's funny is that like the whole documentary is just like, well, this album came out, nobody bought it. And this album came out, nobody bought it. And this album came. And it's like, well, I mean, they must have done okay. You know what I mean? They were able to be in a band for like their whole lives. Like they couldn't have been that. But if you watch the documentary, you'd think they were like absolute failures that never got anywhere. It's very interesting, but it's a good documentary.
Weird. I guess they made a ton of money in royalty licensing.
Oh yeah, and they also toured like constantly. They like toured, like they were one of those bands back in the old days. They like were workhorses. They like never stopped touring. So I don't know. It's an interesting documentary. It's actually all on YouTube for free. That's how I watched it. It's in like 480p, but it's definitely interesting to watch. End of the century style documentary. But that's all I watched.
All right.
Gogs, what happened at Saving Private Ryan? Are you familiar with World War II?
Yeah, I don't know if you guys know about this, but there was a world war.
Greatest Generation, my ass.
We liked it so much, we ran it back.
Enter that Dennis. Two wars.
So, movie opens with, you know, arguably one of the craziest. No. And I'll mention this later, but like,
movie opens with an old guy walking through Arlington Cemetery.
Oh, right. The movie opens stupid. The movie opens with an old man.
I didn't remember this either. When it started playing, I was like, is this the right movie? Because I remember it starting like in media res on the beach. I forgot all about this part.
It opens dumb.
Let me start and say that this is my problem with the movie. This is my only problem with the movie. The wraparound doesn't make any sense because
the movie opens with they're at Normandy.
Right. Well, hold on. No. The movie opens with old man Matt Damon going to the cemetery. It's famous, Arlington, right?
Normandy. Yeah.
The cemetery is called Normandy.
No, it's in Normandy, France.
Oh, that's
really?
Yeah. Oh, hence all those GIs that died at that.
Oh, at okay. That,
if I understand correctly.
Oh, you're probably right. I thought the French flag was there to symbolize like where they had passed.
That no, makes no, no. All those GIs, they couldn't bring all those bodies back, and they
that makes a lot.
There, if I remember correctly.
Either way,
that makes a lot more sense than what I thought.
Yeah, that makes a lot more sense, Gogs. But so it starts out here, and then like. It starts out with old Matt Damon and then flashes back. But like, this isn't from his perspective. He didn't witness most of this movie. So it's like, I don't understand the wraparound. It's very strange. And also all three of us forgot this part of the movie even existed. So like, I've seen this movie multiple times and I gunned to my head. I would have been like, it started at the beach. It started with them on the boats.
Yeah. I forgot about it just now. So like,
but this scene, oh my God, this scene. I mean, I have my issues with Steven Spielberg now, but like this is like a fucking...
this is the beginning of it. This is the start of Spielberg becoming just a propaganda shill. But anywho,
I mean,
this is
interesting. I didn't expect this guy. Yeah, propaganda shit. World War II.
Movie opens.
All right, go ahead.
With
fascinating.
This old man who you don't know who he is, shuffling through a graveyard with his dumbass kids, and this one kid's taking pictures of him like an ass. And then now we smash cut to when the movie gets interesting, which is the landing at Normandy.
Interesting slash absolutely horrific and
horrifying.
A hellish nightmare on Earth.
Like, I can't, like, this, like, I'll say this. The movie does not glorify war.
Not at all.
At all.
This is more violent and horrific than, like, any horror movie.
Yeah. So.
And it does such a good job at realism. Like, it feels so real what you're watching, and like, so like, I don't know, like watching that intro sequence, there's so much going on. Like, there's a part in the very beginning where they're coming out of the boats, and you see, like, you're just at the water line, right? And the camera is going all over the place, and there's a part where, like, the camera is under the water, it moves up quickly, and there's a bullet that whizzes by the camera, and it's like so seamless. Like, I feel like if a lesser director, George Lucas, did this, everything would seem so artificial. And like, I'm sure that they used a lot of CGI trickery in here, at least a little bit. They had to have.
But they didn't really blow those guys up.
Everything looks so kinetic and real, and it seems so horrific. Like, I don't know, I went through a war nerd phase. I read a lot of books about World War I and World War II. And like, I've always thought that like this plan is absurd. Like, to take that beachfront like that, it's how did we ever fucking win? How did we take that beach?
I mean, they picked that beach because it was they did a head fake, if I remember correctly. I mean,
you are correct. That is exactly
right?
what happened.
That's why it was called D-Day, H hour. Like, nobody knew where and, or when, because they kept it secret. So like, it kept the Germans spread everywhere, and they're like,
you're throwing guys.
Oh, it's meat and grinder,
dude. Like, yeah. They got all those beachheads with the fucking 50 cows or 30 cows at the time. But like, god damn, like it's
just from an emotional, like, mental perspective. Can you imagine, right? Because the invasion got called off, I think, at least once, possibly twice, because of weather. So you're a GI waiting to go into this meat grinder, and then they're like, today's the day. And you're like, no, it's not. And you got to sit around and just sit with it for like another day or two or a week or whatever it was.
Like, I'm not as familiar with World War II history as both of you. Did the GIs and like I knew the uppers knew what it was going to be. Did the GIs know it was going to be such just a... Like, there's no better term for it.
It depends.
I think everyone had knowledge of, like, look, we are going up against fortifications. We are going to hit this beach. And then there was weather issues, because address it during the storming of the beach. Like, the armor isn't here. It's floundering in the bay. They had more anti-air resist. So the original plan was the 101st and the 82nd and all the other airborne's drop in like 2 days prior and soften it.
Yeah.
And then they attack. Well, defense was worse than they expected. People, and they address it in the movie, people got scattered. So there's troops all over the place.
Yeah, that's how
they're supposed to be.
You know how they talk about later on in the movie when they're looking for Ryan? They're like, well, they got airdropped like all over the place. That's exactly what Gogs is talking about. Like,
I know this isn't the movie. You see all of that in Band of Brothers.
Correct. Yeah, in this movie, a guy shows up from Easy Company, which is Band of Brothers. Yep.
But they don't show the air part, and Band of Brothers is all about, well, the first couple of episodes are all about the air assault and how fucking great that was. And how such a good companion piece to this. Like,
Band of Brothers was after this, right?
It was basically after this. After this was so popular, Tom Hanks and Spielberg
produced it, right?
Came back and made Band of Brothers.
Band of Brothers is such good TV, such a great series.
Yeah, and
The Pacific too.
Based on a book that I need to finish reading.
I never watched The Pacific, but it's on Netflix right now. Good. I need to check that out. That is Rami Malek. Pictures on Netflix are accurate.
A very young Rami Malek.
So anyway, now we're hitting the beach, and I forget which beach they're on. I don't know if it's Omaha or wherever, but they take the beach, and it's like we don't have to get into specifics of it, but it is horrific. People are being shot to, like, the doors drop on these landing vehicles. They are just getting fired upon, like, immediately. It's fish.
They show whole landing vehicles where nobody gets off. The mounted guns take out everybody in the boat or whatever you want to call it.
The shots they keep getting, like, are haunting to me, or like when they keep showing it from the fucking gunner position in the bunkers, and like they're just killing like 30 guys at a time in these boats. They're all just getting fucking their shit, like, pushed in.
It's like literally sitting ducks, just
waiting
to get shot.
I also remember, Alec, and God, I think you played with us too, guys. Remember Call of Duty World War II, and they had this map that was my favorite map of all the maps.
That was one of the maps where you had like the six objective points. Like,
yep,
yeah, you had to get up the beach. You had to use the mines to blow up the beach seawall. Like, I wish that is that game still supported. I don't. It's probably not.
Probably not.
It's so old. But man, that was one of my favorite levels in any Call of Duty game ever.
It was really good.
The noise of the guns when they would reload. The like chings.
Yeah,
that from a Medal of Honor, like that was the Medal of Honor noise in that game for like every scene change, every everything. And man, I just remember that sound so vividly.
Yeah, the stripper clips just paying off. So anyway, people are like, and it's like GIs are dying in, they're not just getting shot, they're dying in horrific ways. Like people are drowning because they went over the edge, but they've got all their gear on.
Oh, God,
they're trying to get free of their gear, and they're catching rounds in the water. Anyway, so this, watch the movie. I can't.
There's a part a little bit later on that I think is such good directing, and it's just like filmmaking, where there's the army priests that are giving guys that are dying their last rites, and then it cuts to Barry Pepper, who's also like praying as he's like about to make like a sniper shot, and it's like, that is fucking brilliant. Like, that's like so good.
And like, from a character development standpoint, like, I know we harp on stuff, like we harp on like Reservoir Dogs, or we talk about the scene in Alien sitting around the dinner table.
Sure.
Like, they managed to do the same thing in this scene. Like, you understand, like, when you meet Tom Hanks's character, like, he freezes up, but then everyone's looking for him, and then he pulls it back in, and he starts leading. Then you got Tom Sizemore giving the performance of a lifetime in this movie.
He's very good in this.
As just, like, immediately, he is loyal, he is steadfast, he is going to just do what needs to be done. And he's never going to question it, right? You get Barry Pepper's character. You get Mellish, who's kind of just like, I don't know, man. You get Ryben, who's kind of mouthy. You don't get a whole lot of Caparzo, but that's okay. He's still doing great. And then I think, and TJ touched on this, you get Wade, played by Giovanni Ribisi, who is sitting there the middle of a bullet storm trying to patch some dude up. Yeah. And then like he finally stops the bleeding on this one dude. And he fucking, and the guy gets zapped in the head, and then just jumps up screaming at the Germans. Like,
yeah,
I don't think Barry Pepper, excuse me, not Barry Pepper, I don't think Giovanni Ribisi holds a gun.
His death is the saddest death in the whole movie. It's like his whole thing is he's just trying to save people, and then he's the one that gets it. It's very sad. And them yelling, I know we're going all over the place, but I feel like this is going to be a hard movie to completely summarize. But them yelling, you know, tell us what to do, man, because he's the medic, you know, he's like the field medic, and it's just like, also his hands are constantly just soaked in blood. Like, it's just like, what a fucking
well, there's a scene where he gives aid to a German who catches a round later in the film. But anyway, so So they're working their way up the beach. It's a nightmare. They finally take the beach. There's another scene on them finally leave the beach where some guy gets shot. Hanks is like, "You're getting off this beach." He grabs him. He starts dragging him, screaming "medic" to get up the beach. And then the guy gets hit with a mortar round, gets blown to pieces. Miller doesn't realize this and keeps dragging what's left of the guy. He's like, Jesus Christ.
Oh,
like,
yeah, that shit.
There's people brutal. Screaming for their mothers. There's body parts everywhere. It is a nightmare, and it's all shot in real light. I think most of this movie shot in real light, and it's gorgeous.
It seems
that makes it. That makes it more horrific.
Yeah.
It's being like actively shot. I think they filmed this on like some beach in Ireland.
But is that where they did it?
Yeah. And like a lot of the soldiers are Irish, either reenactors or maybe illegit soldiers. But most of the extras and stuff, at least in the first scene, are all Irish. There's a few shots on the beach. Like there's a shot where I think it's a medic is helping somebody and gets shot through his canteen. And the water pours out of the canteen and then blood starts pouring out through the canteen, like into his like guts. And then a few seconds later, he realizes he's been hit, and it's just, it's just amazing. It's
horrific. Yeah.
It's horrific, but it's also like the shot itself and the effect is incredible.
Yeah. I agree.
So
the one soldier gets his helmet dinged. And he's like, "Oh, I can't believe I survived it." Pulls the helmet off, then immediately gets framed.
Shot. Yeah, Jesus.
So, yeah. So, like, and like I'm saying, so Miller's leading. He's part of the Rangers. He's a captain. He's leading his guys up the beach. And they're like, somebody's like, "We're not staying here because we'll die." And he's like, "Take the beach."
And then
like,
when they get up to the beachhead, I guess that's what you call that, right? Where they actually had cover on the sand.
Yeah.
He's like, he's an actor. He's like, "Who's in charge? Who's in charge?" And somebody's like, "You are."
Yeah.
And Hanks gives a pause for a second, like, and you see his face go to like, "What the fuck? How am I in charge of all this?" But then like that lasts for like a second and a half, maybe. Then he steals himself and just starts giving orders to everybody, getting everybody organized again and like pulling, like, "Who are you?" "Oh, I'm from the 113th or whatever. I don't know where my group is." "All right, well, fall in."
Yeah, and then like there's the part where they're up against that beachhead and they're trying to blow it up. In the meantime, he's like, "Shit, this isn't working. None of this is going well." And he's like, he's got a radio man with him. And he keeps telling the radio guy, he's like, "All right, call this." And he pull it, and the scene keeps cutting back and forth. It's like to the right of Tom Hanks is his guys he's giving orders to. The left's the radio man. He's like, "Listen, the armor's not here. Heavier resistance than we expected. The beach isn't clear. Tell him." Then he goes back, his mortars, goes back, tells the radio guy a new update. Then he goes back, and the third time he goes to the guy, the guy's got his face caved in.
Yeah, really gross.
So anyway, they finally take the beach. It's horrific. It's insane. Just the script gets flipped eventually because it becomes a turkey shoot for the GIs, killing all the Nazis in the bunkers and the trenches once they get behind them.
Flushing them out with flamethrowers, which, like, oh, my
God. They hit them with the flamethrower and say, "Don't shoot them. Let them burn."
Because they're going to waste – they don't want to waste the bullets. Yeah.
No, they just want them to burn.
Yeah, they want them – that's like revenge. They want them to suffer.
So, like, can you imagine jumping into this with, like, 6 gallons of high explosive strapped to your back? Like, as that happens, one guy catches a round with a flamethrower on him and he just erupts into flames.
He blows up and takes out like 5 or 6 people with him.
Yeah.
No,
I've played enough video games to know you always shoot the guy with the explosive backpack.
So anyway, they take the beach finally. And then it pulls out and you see, like, it does, it's sort of like afterwards. I think Tom Sizemore says something along the lines, "You ever seen anything like this in your life?" And like, it's got, Tom Hanks is like reviewing the scene and he's kind of, and then it cuts to like all the bodies, like just in the surf and whatever. And then it kind of slowly pans into this backpack that says like S. Ryan. And then it goes to the War Department, and the War Department's all the people typing up all the letters about everyone who's lost family members at the war. And this one typist figures out that, wait, I just wrote a letter for Ryan. And I think I wrote another letter for Ryan. And they put it all together that there are 4 Ryan brothers. 3 of them have already died. And that their mom is Bryan Cranston goes to some general And that general looks super familiar too, but I couldn't place him.
Yeah, I couldn't place that guy either.
But oh, yeah. You know who he was? Uh-uh. He was the dad in Fargo. He's the guy that owned dealership. And they're like, he reads this letter from Lincoln. He's like, listen, we got to go get this kid because we can't let them all die. So then you go to, you see the cutaway to Iowa where James Francis Ryan is from. And they're like, all right, put someone together to find his ass. All right, yeah, bet. So now Dennis Farina is enjoying coffee and just a relaxing day on the beach in front of Tom Hanks. And Tom Hanks is giving his report about how he like took out a minefield and like took out some like artillery. And he's just like looking at these people that aren't really having that hard a time. And then they're like, listen, Captain, we need you to put together like a little itty bitty squad and go find this kid. And he's like, all right, orders are orders.
There's something we skipped over for a second that I wanted to mention.
Sure.
The scene where I forget which two Americans it is are walking up and there's two Germans that are surrendering.
Oh, yeah.
And they shoot them anyway. I forget which two that is, or if it's just two random. Just,
they're not two randos.
They never.
But yeah, apparently, I didn't have the subtitles on, but I was looking up stuff about the movie. Apparently, those guys were not Nazis. They were like Czechs that were forced into war, and they're saying to them, they're speaking Czech, and they're saying in Czech, we're Czechs, we're not Nazis.
Oh,
we're Czechs. We were forced, and then they just shoot them anyway because they don't understand them.
Yeah, that's something like that's one of those like ugly truths about the. I mean, there's a lot of ugly truths about the war, but like, the Nazi movement in Germany was actually widely unpopular, and a lot of like German soldiers were just fucking German people that didn't necessarily know or agree with like the Hitler's like whole ideology.
Yeah, like I'm not gonna go and say that they were not all evil.
No.
A lot of German soldiers were not necessarily Nazis. They were
German soldiers. They were pressed into this, right?
Yeah. Right. There was what do you call it? Conscription when you were forced to go into the. There was, I don't know what the percentage was. In one of the books I read, it was that they gave the number, but it was like pretty high. So like, it's one of those things to remember where it's just like, you know, I know in like video games and stuff, it's like, I'll kill the Nazis. It's like real easy. But like a lot of those just like grunt troops were probably just like regular people that were forced to fight. You know,
I had no idea what was actually.
Yeah. 100%.
Horrifically happening.
And like Goggs just said, they had the German army forced a lot of like prisoners of war. Like if you were like a fighting aged man and then some country that they took over, they would just send you to the fucking front line. So
yeah, same. But do they care?
Yeah.
So anyway, they take the beach. They tell him, here's your mission. They're like, get a squad together. And he goes like, all right, give me Ryben. He's always going to take, I can't think of Tom Sizemore's name. Shoot. It's not something.
Horvath.
He's like, so give me Ryben. Give me Jackson, Wade. Give me so-and-so. So-and-so's dead. All right. Give me Caparzo. Give me so-and-so. So-and-so's dead. All right. Then Mellish. Like, Mellish almost got out of this. Like, Mellish almost didn't have to get got.
Mellish is Jewish, and he lets every German soldier know about that.
It's like
a big character point, point of character for him in this movie.
Well, that guy was later starred in The Hebrew Hammer.
Oh, yeah.
Superhero movie. Adam Goldstein.
Goldstein, I believe. Also, he is one of the Jews that run the media in Walk Hard.
Him, Harold Ramis, and I forget who the third guy is.
Yeah. Rehab? Rehab? Oh, yeah. Rehab.
So whatever happened to, and I'm just going to ask this question to the group, because whatever happened to Ed Burns? Because I was wondering that too.
I'm thinking the exact same thing. I was like, I always get him confused with friggin'
Ben Affleck?
No. I get him confused with Jesus Christ.
John, I forget.
I was going to say Ethan Hawke. I don't know why. No. I don't know why he reminds me of Ethan Hawke.
But like Ed Burns was in a couple of things in this era, and he seemed like he was having a pretty promising career, and then I haven't heard from him.
Yeah, what happened to that guy? When's the last time he's been in something?
He's good in this.
He's great in this. He's really good in this. Everybody's good in this.
So then they send everybody off. So you got Mellish, Caparzo, Ryben, Wade, Horvath, and Miller, and they need a translator because they got to go into France and try and figure out maybe where Ryan landed. So they pick up, is it Jeremy Davies? Is that his name?
He's still acting and stuff, by the way.
But that's his name. That's the actor's name, right?
Yeah.
So they pick up Oppum, and Oppum is, he's part of a logistics corps, but he speaks German and he speaks French. He's not a shooting guy. He's not a ranger. So they attach him to this ranger.
He's barely a soldier. He wants to bring his fucking typewriter when he's going off with Tom Hanks.
Yeah. So, and
John Corbett is the guy I was thinking of who looks just from My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
He does. Oh, yeah. He looks very
similar to Ed Burns.
And Tom Hanks could not be more patient. He's like, it's all right, Ryman. Forget something. Oppum. He's like, Oppum grabs a Nazi helmet. He's like, that souvenir? He's like, oh, no. He's like, all right, go get your helmet. Let's go.
And when you find out later that Tom Hanks, his former profession, a lot of the way he handles things, not what you'd think of as a typical army leader, make a lot more sense.
Yeah.
Right.
When you find out later what he did for a living beforehand.
Right. He's like Joshua Lawrence Chamberlain.
Yeah. I don't know who that is.
Here's I've also been a bit of a war buff with the Civil War. Joshua Lawrence Chamberlain is my, if we're allowed to have favorite generals in the Civil War. He was a Northern general.
That's a good start for favorite start. Generals.
Yeah, right.
Northern in the North. That's a good start.
General from the North. He was from Maine. He taught at Bodine College. He was like a literature professor at Bodine College. And he was the guy that held Little Round Top he's awesome. The dude's a fucking G. But similar thing, an intellectual who was a leader of, in horrific war. And here's another thing. I know we have to get off the beach, but there's a scene. And once again, I think it's tremendous character building.
We have to get off the beach, but also the beach takes up almost a third of the movie.
Yeah. The whole
assault on Normandy or assault on the beach. It takes up a good 45 to 50 minutes. It's not they don't cut anything. And I read when that scene was over, I looked at the time and I was like, holy shit, that felt like a 5-minute scene that went on for so long.
I mean, yeah. I feel like you could make the D-Day an entire film easily.
So anyway, there's a scene that once again, tremendous, in my opinion, character building. It tells you a lot without telling you anything.
I don't think anyone would disagree with you on that.
But when Tom Sizemore's character picks up a handful of dirt and he puts in a ration tin and he writes France on it, and then he puts it in this bag with North Africa, Italy, you immediately now know, oh, these guys aren't just fresh to the fight. These guys have been through it. They've been part of this campaign for a minute. And I think I just thought it was really cool. So anyway, so they send these guys off to go find Ryan. And the rest of the movie, they go to this little French village.
And none of them are real stoked about it, to be
clear. No, they're like, this is a, like, th- and there's some great just banter. So Oppum is trying to learn everyone. Everybody's like, go fuck off, nerd. And then you've got Jackson. We got Ryben complaining to Miller. And he's like, he's like, how come you never complain, Cap? He's like, I don't complain to you. Complaints go up. You complain to me. I complain up the thing, whatever else. He's like, this is a stupid mission. This is FUBAR, whatever else. And then Jackson's like, sir, can I say something? He's like, go ahead, Jackson. It's like, I think this is a horrible misappropriation of government. He's like, listen up, Ryben. This is how you complain. He's like, you get me within a mile up to and including 1 mile, Adolf Hitler, war's over, boys. And this here rifle, Barry Pepper's so fucking
good. Barry Pepper rocks in this movie.
This is probably, there's a lot of people or a handful of people in this movie. This is probably their best performance.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ever. And Barry Pepper's one of them.
Vin Diesel's one of them.
Yeah, Vin Diesel's excellent in the like.
Well, Vin Diesel
that he's in.
Vin Diesel is very understated, which is something you'll never see out of Vin Diesel after that, well, except for maybe Groot.
Yeah. He's just like. So they get to this village, and they got to fight Nazis in this village. And, you know, there's a scene where, like, there's this French family who's, like, stuck under fire. And, like, Vin Diesel can't help it. He's got to save this little girl because it reminds him of his niece. Then he catches one, and then he's dying in the mud undercover. And,
like, for what feels like a half an hour.
Yeah.
Like,
the death scenes in this movie are insanely powerful. Like, yeah, he's there, it's raining, like, he's looking over at Mellish, and Mellish is like, just keep your fucking head down, stop
and it. Stop, and stop moving, because they showed, was it right before this?
Yeah.
They showed the sniper shoot the messenger, the American messenger, and then they keep shooting him, and they're like, why are they doing that? Like, we do the same thing. As long as the messenger's breathing, he still carries that message.
Right.
So they're telling Caparzo, stop moving, just lay there. And you see the German sniper like keeps sighting in on him over and over. Like, should I finish him?
Well, he follows the blood, and he follows where he's looking. He's like, oh, there's more over there. It's a very smart scene.
And a movie full of incredible shots. Like, this might be the most incredible in the whole movie.
And then, and then the whole time, Caparzo pulls out this letter to his dad. He's like, "You gotta get this to him." And I'm like, just dying. So,
and he's covering in blood inadvertently because he's bleeding
everywhere.
Yeah, it's fucked up. So he dies
the whole time. Caparzo's dying. Barry Pepper is sighting in on the sniper, like slowly, methodically making his way across the ground and like sighting in on the sniper, and this scene is so fucking brutal, but also so absolutely incredible.
And like Barry Pepper's character's like, he's looking around, he's like, that's where I'd be, like, let me go figure out. And then the sniper finally, and Alex, right, the scene's so cool because he sweeps over, he kind of gets a glimpse of Mellish, and then he sweeps over a little further there, and he sees Barry Pepper aiming at him, and then there's a and they do it great because there's a flash, and then you don't hear the shot because of, you know, speed of light, speed of sound.
Right.
And then the fucking sniper just gone. So now Caparzo was dead.
That effect was all practical.
Oh, him getting shot through the eye like that?
They said they had like a fake eye glued to the sight.
Oh, that's perfect.
So when he put his eye, when he's holding his eye up against it, and they did like a shot of canned air in his face to show the blowback. And then when he pulls back, his eye's already fucked up because it was glued onto the site.
That's all.
It's just
awesome.
It's so cool.
It looks great. Yeah, it looks fantastic.
So yeah. So now this is where they hook up with Paul Giamatti.
Yes.
He's first.
Because Paul Giamatti's in the town, and they're trying to figure out, is Ryan here? Let's go figure it out. Let's run around.
Paul Giamatti's like, he's so not funny. There are some funny scenes in this movie, and it's not funny, but he's like so, like, it's hard to describe. He's not upbeat, but like, he just takes everything in stride, and he's like, all right, what's next?
Also, like, this sequence, like, and Paul Giamatti, like, in a weird way, it's kind of like slapstick, because at the end of this scene, he fucking trips into a wall that knocks open a bunch of Nazis, and like, obviously, that's not funny, but like, it's kind of like a cartoonish thing to happen, you know what I mean?
He's also like, he's like running around, he's like, my feet hurt, oh god, like, he's like running through the battlefield, holding his lower back. Feel
like Grandma Myrtle or whatever.
I'm glad Paul Giamatti didn't die. I couldn't take Paul Giamatti on screen death.
So yeah, like Alex saying, like they sits down to like check his feet, and he knocks over like a beam, it smashes through a wall, and then there's this standoff between like six Germans and all these guys, and they're all just screaming at each other, no one's doing nothing, and they're just like staring down the barrel of each other, and then Ted Danson comes out of nowhere and smokes everybody.
Yeah, because he's got the higher ground, and they don't even see him. So,
and Ted Danson's like a major, like another captain, like he's higher rank. So then they talk to Ted Danson, like, "Hey, do you know about this guy Ryan?" It's like, "I think we got a Ryan here. Go find him." Like, "All right, cool." And then they bring in Firefly. They bring in Nathan Fillion.
Yeah,
and everybody's like, oh, well, this was easy. We're not easy. We already lost Caparzo. This sucks. But, like, we found him. And I forget, somebody, he, like, Nathan Finney goes marching by, and somebody goes, I knew he'd be an asshole. And they show up, and they're telling him, they're like, all right, buddy, like, sit down. Like, I got some bad news for you. Listen, your brothers are dead. He's like, oh, no, how'd they die? He's like, well, they died in combat. He's like, that's not possible. They're still in grade school. Like, are you James Ryan? He's like, yeah. He's like, James Francis Ryan from Iowa? He's like, I'm James, whatever, Sidney Ryan from, like, Detroit or whatever. Right, right. They're like, that's not you. And he's like, oh, how do you know it's not a mixed up? But how do you know my brothers aren't dead? Like, and then sure he has this emotional breakdown.
Yeah. Like, you sure my brothers are okay? Like,
yeah. So, and it's not funny. I mean, it's funny on its face, but it's not funny just because it's just added trauma this poor kid doesn't need. Right. So, and then Ted Danson, like everybody else, just giving a performance of his lifetime, gives Hank some advice, like, find this kid, get him home, like, just do the right thing. Like, all right, we're going to camp out, and then we're going to leave on a cover night. Cool, bet. And there's a really cool scene of them marching out of the town at night, like, with, like, shit going off in the background and stuff. So then the next thing they encounter is, like, a radar station that's, like, guarded by Nazis. And everybody's like, let's just go around it. We don't need to be here for this. Like, this is...
Yeah, but they have gun turrets set up. So yeah, Tom Hanks is like, well, the next people that come through are going to get mowed down by this guy. So we need
there was other dead GIs like on the ground. So like, all right, well, we got it. We can't leave this. And I forget, is this before or after they meet Leland Orser? This is before, right?
This is before. This is immediately before.
Oh, no. This is after because when they met Leland Orser, Wade was still alive because Wade tells him to stop looking at the dog tags. Like,
oh, you're right.
So that seems awful, too.
Yeah. Right, so then they go to that, they find this other group of airborne, and you get this really cool scene with Leland Orser. I won't get into it, but, like, it's just a really brilliant, like, well-written, conversation. And they're like, all right, well, look, here's all the guys that died in my ship. Here's all their dog tags. So they start, like, these guys start sorting out, trying to hope. Most of them are trying to hope they find him so they can just get on with the war and stop.
Yeah, so they can stop doing this mission that they don't want to be a part of, yeah.
And so then Wade's like, the moral compass here. And you get more banter, you get more development between the group.
And they start to make like a game out of it almost. And they're like joking and laughing about it.
It's like, all my guys are from New York. It's like, then they start naming names. Like, all the Guineas are catching it today.
Yeah.
So they get out. They end up coming. They see Bertier from Remember the Titans. They
find out he's deaf.
That he finds, I mean, not that
being deaf is funny, but him yelling the whole time is funny.
Yelling this thing, the other guy's saying immediately.
I wish Sean was here because I feel like I need to ask Steven Spielberg this directly, but the deaf guy sounds just like fucking David Lynch from Twin Peaks, because in Twin Peaks he has a hearing aid, so he talks like this, and like, Spielberg and David Lynch are like best friends. I would not be surprised if it was a reference to David Lynch.
Yeah, so like, we're looking for James Ryan. He's like, no, James Francis Ryan from Iowa. So they find out, like, all right, he's in Rommel or wherever. They're like, all right, well, now we're going to Rommel. Oh, they got picked up and made some sort of company, headed out. So now they have this scene where they assault this radar position. Tom Hanks is like, we got to take this, otherwise it's going to kill other folks. So we don't want to do it. But then everybody's like, well, if you guys aren't going to do it, I'm going to do it by myself. So everybody falls in behind them. They take this position. It's horrific because it's all horrific. They take like one German prisoner. Wade dies, and we already talked about it. I don't feel like emotionally revisiting it. It's horrible. So they're left with this German prisoner. And they're like, let's shoot his ass. Like, no, he's going to bury everybody first. So they make him dig all these graves, and the guy's like trying to plead. He's like, fuck Hitler. Like, I love America. I hate Germany. Like, all this stuff. Yeah. And they're like, all right, now we're going to shoot him. And Oppum's like, that's not right. That's not what should be done. So they convince that guy, they convince everyone to let him go. The rest of the group is mad as hell about this. There's dissent. There's almost mutiny. There's Ed Burns is going to go run off. Eisenberg is going to put a round in his head. Well,
the thing, too, that sucks the most is that Ed Burns says, what if he isn't picked up by another unit? Because Tom Hanks is just like, we can't keep him. He's a prisoner of war. Let him walk. The next battalion will pick him up or whatever. And then Ed Burns is like, well, what if he just fucking meets up with another group of Germans first and they put him right back in the fold? And then fast forward to the end of the movie, that's exactly what happens, is he ends up being back on the German side of thing.
Yeah. And actually, I forgot about this. Like, I didn't realize, I thought that he, spoiler alert, I thought that was the guy that killed Mellish in the room. It's not. Two different Germans. But anyway, so they let this guy, they let him live. Everyone's dissenting. People are yelling at each other. And then, so this has been like a minor plot point up until now. It's like, no one knows anything about John Miller. And they're like, he asks Oppen. He's like, there's a pool to figure out his life story or whatever. And he's like, what's the pool up to? He's like, I don't know, like $500, $300, something like that. He's like, all right, I'm a teacher. He gives this whole story about why he's doing this. He just wants to get home. He doesn't want to kill people. That's why. Brings everybody back together. They let the guy go on to Rommel. So now they're marching Rommel.
The exact line is, if finding James Ryan gets me home to my wife faster,
yeah,
I'll do everything in my power to do that.
Yeah. So now they're heading to Rommel. They're going through some field. They're down two guys. Out of nowhere, this German half track shows up, and they're like sitting there, like laying in the bush, like, all right, now what do we do? And out of nowhere, the thing explodes, and they help clean it up. And there's a small fire team of three guys, and they find out that one of them is Ryan, played by Matt Damon, a very young Matt Damon. And they're like, listen, man, we got to come take you home. It's like, well, I can't leave. It's like, your brothers are dead. We come to get you. And they're like, he's like, I can't leave these guys. Like, my brothers being dead, like, sucks, but they'd have died for nothing if I don't help hold this bridge. Yeah. So,
and Hanks is like, well, what are we supposed to tell your mother? Tell him that I stayed with my men to try to save more people or something like that.
I stayed with the only brothers I have left.
That's it. Pretty rough.
Also, like, I think you watched this movie a long time ago. There was a movie called like Restivo. It was a documentary about like the Afghanistan.
Restrepo.
And like that whole movie was about them fucking staying at this point. And then at the end, it was just like, why? Like they, like all these people died and they kept this point for basically nothing. And that's all I could think of watching this. Like all these people are dying over this bridge. You know what I mean? It's just over territory. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, so then they get to the point where it's like, well, maybe we were, it's sort of fatalistic, sort of like, listen, maybe we were meant to be here to do this. So we're going to stay, help you hold this position, because it's like one of two bridges left over this river that will prevent Rommel from reinforcing and allows our armor to get into France. So without getting, they basically do a, What's the movie with the cowboys that defend the town undermanned?
Seven Samurai? Seven? Magnificent Seven.
Yeah. So like
the Three Amigos.
Kinda. Yeah.
So they set up basically defenses with whatever they have. They are undermanned, they are underarmed, they set up defenses, they hold off this German thing. I'm not gonna get into all the details, but it is I would argue it's not as good as the opening scene, but it's damn close. Like, it is an insane battle scene.
I think it might be better than the opening scene only because you've been with these characters for so long, so it's more personalized, and like, I don't know, you're rooting for all of them to survive, but you know better. Like, kind of like they know better. Like, I think it makes it more powerful, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, so they, you know, fucking, oh, Jackson is up here sniping people up in a tower, and then you can finally tell when his moment's up, because one, he starts missing shots, and then two, like a tank zeroes in on him and blows him out of the tower. Like,
yeah, and then he sees the tank re-aiming too late.
Yeah.
And I forget who's in, is there somebody? Whoever's in the tower with them is from the other group, right? It's not.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he yells at them to get out, but it's way too late. Like,
yeah,
the tank's already firing, and it's rough.
Right, and everybody knows where Jackson was, so they see it explode, and they like, yeah, so that happens. Then you get, so who's left? Mellish dies in, like, the most, he might have the worst death scene. Like, his scene is rough, because you're there the whole, what's the joke?
It is. Nick, the only, I would say his death is quicker. Like, the prelude to it, and the fight is long.
Yeah,
but he dies within a couple of seconds of getting stabbed, whereas Caparzo and the Wade, they're like...
They kind of bleed out.
Yeah, but also, they're slowly dying, like, over a period of time.
But it's also hard because there it could have been prevented, because Upham is too scared to do anything. You know what I mean? Like, he could have done something the entire time. And... Yeah. Also, like, I can't remember, I should have done my research, but I remember somebody subtitled what the German says right before he kills him, and it's, like, chilling stuff. I think it's, like, you know, be quiet, like, it's okay, like, just be, it's almost over, or something like that. Just,
yeah.
Also, Denver's uniforms today are hideous. Now they're going to lose, because they didn't wear their cool throwbacks.
You know, I didn't know this, the NFL has weird rules about the playoffs.
Oh, really?
It's like everybody in the Ravens, like, Reddit forums, like, why aren't they wearing their all blacks against the Steelers at night in the playoffs?
Yeah.
And I guess you can't wear any throwbacks or alternates in the playoffs. You're either loaded to your typical homes or aways and, like, mix and match between those.
Classic, no fun.
Yeah. League. Like, how, like, obviously, honestly, the game last night was incredible, but how cool would it have been for the Ravens to come in there? Either all blacks or those new all purples they have.
I mean, I'll go one step further. For the playoffs, they should have all new jerseys. Like, make special fucking jerseys for the playoffs. They'd sell like crazy. It'd be amazing.
Oh, yeah. And you talk about the NFL always wants more money. Like, yeah, make special playoff uniforms. When I got my Flacco jersey, I got it right before they won the Super Bowl, but it had the Super Bowl logo on it.
Yeah,
like it was, and it was in that 2 week window from them getting to the Super Bowl, and I ended up buying a new jersey, and it had the Super Bowl logo like embroidered. I think I still have it. Had the Super Bowl logo embroidered on it. Even just that was like I bought a whole new jersey just for that. Like
it's neat.
Anyway.
Sorry.
Irregardless.
Sorry, football guys, it's playoff season. Sorry.
Playoffs. Sorry. Yep.
Sorry, Liz.
We're almost done, Liz.
Boys, say hi. We're almost done. What's up?
Also, Denver's already up 7-0.
Like
hell yeah. Yeah. If Denver wins, the Ravens get another home playoff game next week.
Sick.
Because Denver will be coming here.
Man, it's going to be quite the sports week if the Buffalo gets it's knocked out of the first round.
How great would that be?
I mean, that's going to be crazy. Jesus.
How tremendous would that be?
We got a long time for that to happen, though. It's still a lot of games.
Yeah. Like, but people in the Ravens forums are like, well, I want the hardest. I want to beat the Bills and beat the Chiefs. I'm like, yeah, that's fine. No, I don't care who. Like, I just want to win.
Yeah, like, I just want to get to the Super Bowl.
If we could play the Texans and Broncos to get to the Super Bowl, all of them at home, tremendous. Like, give me the week. Like, I don't care. Yeah. Well, once you win the Super Bowl, nobody thinks about how you got there.
100%. The road
doesn't matter.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Give me the Texans, Broncos, and then a Super Bowl against the Bucks. Like the last, Jesus Christ. Give me the easiest possible road.
The last time the Ravens went to the Super Bowl, they were a wild card team, weren't they? I feel like they
were. No, they won the division, but
they barely won the division, right?
They won because they had the home game against the Colts, but then they went the hardest road possible because they went into Denver and into New England.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, let's finish up this movie.
So they get so
football. The podcast. Everybody's
dying.
Jackson gets got. Mellish gets got.
They got like
Upham is terrified the entire time.
Yeah.
Tom Sizemore has again like a scene that's not funny because it's like life or death. But like he literally has like a showdown with a German soldier who like they're both like their guns jam. They're both out of bullets. They throw their helmets at each other. Then he gets clipped, like, in the side.
But then they draw pistols, So, anyway, they're being overrun.
At this point, they tell Ryan at the beginning, when they're planning everything, they say to Ryan, he's like, well, where am I supposed to be? And Tom Hanks says, "You're right on my hip. No matter where I go, you stay with me the entire time." And he does, to his credit, up until close to the end, he stays right on his hip the entire time, just helping him with whatever. Oppum doesn't know where to go. Even before Oppum's abject failure at saving Mellish, he doesn't know where to go the whole time. He comes at one point, he's loaded down with what, 30 cal bullets?
30 cal bullets.
Like chains of them on his neck, and they say, "Your job is just to get ammo wherever we need it. You don't have to shoot anybody, just get us ammo." And at one point he goes to Tom Hanks and he's like, "Oppum, are those 30 cal rounds on your shoulders?" And he's like, "Yeah. We do not have a 30 cal at this location. You can take those over to so-and-so, wherever."
He's like, Mellish or Jackson.
But he's like, he still tells him in a way where he's not berating him or like screaming at him.
Right.
He's like, this is constructive criticism. Get your ass over there instead of here. We have no 30 cal here.
He's like gently pointing it out. He's like, "All right, well,
yeah,
it's a teachable moment."
And then
Tom Hanks is never
from there on out.
Yeah, Tom Hanks is never like the fucking classic, like drill sergeant-esque kind of hard ass. Like, he's a hard ass because he's like very tough and competent, but he's never like mean.
No. So everyone's dying. They're falling back to what they call the Alamo on the other side of the bridge. Like, if they have to, they're going to blow this bridge. And so Tom Hanks is trying to get the primer set up so he can blow this thing up, and there's bullets flying. Tom Sizemore dies. Like, everyone's getting clipped. Oppum's stuck on the other side of the bridge, just in a ditch. Then we catch a glimpse of the German they let loose shooting GIs going across the bridge. And then there's a scene where Tom Hanks is looking around just at the chaos. And this is where things start. This is where my criticisms come back. Tom Hanks is looking around the scene and it's a nightmare, right? And it's like, Mike's dead. Stuff's blowing up. Stuff's going bad.
Mike's death isn't necessarily shown, but like, you see him get to safety after he's been hit and he's still talking. He's still aware. "Mike, are you okay?" "Yeah, I just got the wind knocked out of me." And then 5 seconds later, he's gone.
He's not crying and moaning. It's none of that. So So once again, my criticisms begin here. It cuts over to Tom Hanks looking at Ryan, right? Who has two things. He has shown some grit in combat.
Yeah, I thought this was weird. This was a weird choice.
And he has made the choice. He's no coward. He's made the choice to stay here with his boys to defend this bridge. And they don't show him like under fire, like struggling with it. And like, they show him literally sitting there with his arms around his knees, rocking and crying like a child. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I don't like it either.
It completely undermines any character they were trying to give this kid. Like, why would you be like this right now?
Yeah, it's a bad scene and I don't understand it. Like, it doesn't make sense. It kind of, unless like what they're trying to express is that, I don't know. It war breaks even the hardest guy. Cause it's supposed to be shown that he was like posturing that he wanted to stay there. I mean, he obviously stayed there, but I agree with both of you. I don't really like this scene. It's never sat right with me. I think it doesn't make a lot of sense.
If they put that in, they need to do something else to lead to it. Like, show him over the course of the battle, pan to him a couple of times, like clearly losing it.
I agree with that.
Like you said, every time they show him in the battle, he's just with Tom Hanks, like shooting, doing whatever, like doing his normal soldier battle stuff. He's not like, you don't see like his hands shaking or him like getting ready to like lose it or anything like that. It's just like a switch, which like I understand. I'm sure that actually happens. Like, people just, they hit their breaking point and they lose it. But in a movie like this, you need something to show like a precursor to it, not just especially in the heat of battle when there's so much other stuff going on.
Right.
Yeah.
So this all happens. At some point, Tom Hanks is just like, he's been wounded. He's dying. He's leaning up against this rock and he is just firing. All he has left is his issued 40, his 1911. And he's just shooting at this tank coming at him. Just, it's like, it's hopeless, but he just doesn't give up. And then his last shot, the tank explodes And then you see a jet fly over the top. Now reinforcements are here. The Germans are fought off. They're held off. Oppum captures like six guys. Like, he bunkered them like fucking paintball. And then he shoots the guy who effectively betrayed his trust. And then
Oppum coming up way too, like scoring that last minute touchdown when you're down 40.
Yeah,
that's coming way too late with the
garbage with time.
Yeah,
yeah. But I will say, like, the KD ratio for this squad, pretty good. So then Tom Hanks has this moment with Matty Ice with Matt Damon.
Damon,
where Matt he's
Damon.
Like. Where he's like, listen, pulls him in. He's like, earn this, like,
yeah, I
like make that. This worth something. I have no issue with that. I'm like, cool, right? And now, if then he expires, Ryben lives for the time being, and now we're cut back to Normandy, and we're at the where old man is looking at the thing, and now the movie falls apart. So he's staring at Miller's grave. His wife walks up, and the way she delivers the line, looking at it, she's like, John Miller. She delivers it almost like, who's this guy? As if the man who kept me alive in the war was some foreign concept to her. But maybe it was just a bad line reading. And then he's like, tell me I'm a good man. Tell me I've led a good life. I'm like, this is un-. And then it's just a long pause on the American flag. Cut it out. Like, we don't need any of that. Like,
yeah, I really hate the wraparound.
The pause on the American flag is a bit much. I wouldn't mind the wraparound part. Like, I didn't even care about what TJ said at the beginning. Like, he didn't know all the stuff that was happening. Like,
right,
whatever. Like, I don't care. There's stuff that happens that Captain Miller wouldn't have known because he wasn't.
Yeah,
that's there funny. In the scenes, like, it's just like Steven Spielberg is amazing, but he's not perfect. But like the breaking down at the end of the movie in the graveyard, the cemetery needs. I don't know. I think here's I feel like I if would. They would have if they would have fixed the breakdown during the battle better, then the scene at the end would have worked a lot better. Not slowly, but cracking down over the course of the battle. And then he's thinking at whatever, the age of 70, did I earn it? It makes more sense and it's not as tacked on. The way they did the battle, it makes it feel tacked on and unnecessary. I don't know that he needed to add anything to this movie because it's already almost 3 hours long. And it doesn't waste any time. And I'm not mad that it's 3 hours long, but... Maybe that's like the one thing they could have added a little bit, like three more minutes of Matt Damon shots during the battle, kind of losing his nerve.
Yeah, I agree completely.
Can I propose an alternate to the wraparound?
Sure.
Could, and maybe this is cheesy too, I don't know. But I would have preferred if the movie had opened with this old man, maybe not as old, like pulling up to some house in Pennsylvania. And then, like, sitting in the driveway for a minute. And then we see the whole movie. And then the end of it is him finally meeting Tom Hanks' wife to tell her everything that he accomplished because of Tom Hanks. Because the movie's about him.
Yeah, I don't have
Ryan. That might work better. I also was thinking if it was, like, A League of Their Own, where they tell the whole story, but it's part of, like, a museum opening or something. It's like an exhibit.
Yeah.
And they're like retelling the story of how this brave battalion saved one guy. And that makes more sense for the wraparound and that he's at the opening or whatever.
Because you don't get any, Tom Hanks doesn't get any closure because he just wants to get home to his wife. Like, feel that.
I was gonna say technically he does, but he doesn't. He stays in France forever.
The thing is that it the movie's about like sacrifice, right? So the reason that you have Matt Damon's character breaking down is because he's realizing like all these men died just so that I could live. And it's kind of a and the reason it ends on the flag is because that is supposed to express how we have our freedoms because all these men died for us. So it's, you know, I mean,
yeah,
it's,
and like, this was a pre 9/11. This wasn't, in the super uber patriotic, like, you need to love America 100% no matter what.
I mean, it's a thing
that,
where
that wasn't a thing then, but it's not like it is now.
No,
like not then at all. When he made this, like, holding onto the flag at the end. I'm not gonna say it's a novel concept, but it didn't mean like what it does now.
I think you take a good movie, but like the message, they kind of beat you over the head with the message of the movie, and I think that is kind of takes away from it a little bit, but still, it's still great.
Like, my least emotional connection was to Ryan in this whole movie.
I think that's kind of the point.
That is kind of the point, though.
And like, I guess, but if that's the point, then why is he supposed to be like our conduit to the feel? Like, why?
Again, he is representing of the self-sacrifice that soldiers make for people they'll never meet. The whole idea to go to war is you're fighting for your countrymen, right? But like, you're never gonna meet me if some ding dong in Catonsville, but you're still. Hypothetically, you are willing to die for my right to live in this country. It's a little overwrought, and it's a little, you know, it's a little hyperbolic, I guess. But that's what the movie's about. Like, they all died for some guy they didn't know, just so a lady in America didn't lose all of her kids. So the whole movie's about self-sacrifice,
and also about futility, because
yes.
Ultimately, what they did at the end, like, didn't truly matter because the airborne was right behind them anyway.
Right,
like, exactly. Even if the Germans crossed that bridge, they were about to get bombed to shit regardless.
Yeah.
And, like, nobody could communicate that to, I don't know, did they have a line where they said they had lost communication with?
Yeah, they didn't have, they like, nah, it I seemed like that, that in... That entire countryside, like, every time they ran into an Italian, he was like, do you have communications at work? And everybody was basically like, no. Also, this movie would be a lot easier if they all had cell phones back then. Nice boners, yeah. Greatest generation.
Give them all some sat phones.
That's right. Get them.
At one of the points, Tom, hang on. Wait a minute. Hang on. Yeah. Pulls out like a, what is that one? Like a razor?
Yeah, he's got a Nokia flip phone.
StarTech.
Anything else you want to talk about before we get into Five Knuckle Films? I feel like we've already dissected quite a bit of the movie.
Yeah, we're pretty. No, we've gone after it.
Yeah, and the I'm hungry. So, Five Knuckle Shuffle time. I'm always hungry when I do the show. I don't know why.
Doesn't matter what meal of the day it is.
Yeah, it's either dinner or now it's lunch. We're doing this is not that anybody cares, but this is a rare morning edition of Movie the Podcast. Alec.
It's a 10. Like, it has its problems. A couple of minor problems, like the wraparound, Private Ryan's breakdown at the end, and the point of it being futile isn't a problem. Like, that's just
kind of the point
how war goes. But like, I was rapt at attention, rapt RAPT for 2 hours and 43 minutes or whatever it is. Like, I pause it to go to the bathroom, and I never pause it to go to the bathroom during most of our movies.
Right,
just let it play while I go pee. Just like, I'm not going to miss anything. like, this movie is absolutely excellent and close to perfect, and its flaws don't do enough for me to overtake the raw, like, emotion of just about every scene. Like, there's not a scene in this movie where, well, I mean, maybe a couple, but pretty much not a scene in this movie where, like, if I wasn't in the right frame of mind, I wouldn't be tearing up at under certain circumstances of, like, how I felt at that given time. There's so much emotion to it. And everybody gives incredible performances. Yeah, it's a 10. Real quick, Steven Spielberg cast Matt Damon because he was unknown. Huh. And then immediately after casting him and like starting filming, Good Will Hunting became like the biggest
It was a huge movie.
Amateur movie of all time. So everybody knew who Matt Damon was. Like, they weren't going to use him in like the marketing or anything. Huh. Like, because he wasn't a known actor when they started making this. Like, they weren't going to put him on the posters or name him. It was going to be like a surprise, kind of. But right. If you didn't know who Matt Damon was, you wouldn't have known who he was at the end. But then Good Will Hunting became like the biggest, not amateur, what's a...
Independent
film of all time. Like, while they were making this, I was like, oh, well, I guess we should capitalize on that and use Matt Damon in the marketing and stuff for it.
Makes sense.
But yeah, it's a 10. Like, I can't say I love this movie. Like, it's so hard to, like, everybody should watch this movie and nobody should watch it.
Right.
Like, it's so fucking good, but it's also so fucking awful. Like, I was reading about critics and, like, veterans who had to, like, get up and, like, leave during parts.
Oh, I'm sure.
So, oh, yeah, I can imagine it'd be so very triggering.
Realistic and, like, yeah, just lifelike and accurate. Yeah, TJ.
It's a 9 for me, dog. I love this movie. I think this movie is one of the best, like, World War II movies ever made. I think Steven Spielberg is a fucking genius, and it makes me depressed at the fucking hack that he's turned into.
Ready Player One is a masterpiece.
Yeah, exactly. But it's really
and Alita good. Battle Angel. He directed that, didn't he?
No, that was Robert Rodriguez. I think he produced it. Ow. But this movie's great. The cast is great. The set pieces are great. The tension in all the scenes is wonderful. There's so many, like, interesting, like, screen transitions. Like, the when they are going from one battle to the next before they meet Paul Giamatti, there is just this scene of rain and it's hitting the leaves. And then that the sound of water hitting the leaves transitions to the sound of gunfire. And it's like, that shit is so fucking good. Like, that's like artsy bullshit. And it's like Steven Spielberg gets it, man. Like, he's just like, the guy understands the language of cinema to sound as fucking pretentious as possible. And it's like, it's great because this is a perfectly, like, you know, anybody can enjoy this movie. I mean, obviously, I enjoy, like Alec just said, and I totally agree with him. I think we've talked about this with other movies, but, like, there's movies that are, like, really fucking good, but you can't walk out of a theater and be like, hell yeah, that kicked ass. You know what I mean? Like another World War II movie I saw last year, Zone of Interest. I mean, I thought that movie was a fucking masterpiece, but it's not like, hell yeah, fucking The Banality of Evil, motherfucker. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and this movie's a lot like that. I mean, this is like the horrors of war type movie. But I think it's great. I think, like, again, I think Alex said it where, this is, like, so many people's, like, best role they ever took, and a lot of it are very smaller roles. Like, I love Tom Sizemore, but, like, a lot of Tom Sizemore roles, he's kind of a cartoon character.
He's very big.
In this, he's very kind of, he just feels real. Everybody's getting the platoon is great. Everybody they run into is great. Like, I love to, I think something that's kind of forgotten about in this movie, or an element that, like, isn't talked about this much, I like how it's kind of like a weird, like, road movie. Like, they're walking on that road, but I love how, you know, it's about them walking through this just bombed out, desolate French countryside. Like, I don't know. I think this movie is a fucking masterpiece. I have problems with, I agree with both of you with Ryan crying at the end scene is a very weird shot that you literally could edit out and nobody would miss it. I don't like the wraparound, which is something I forgot about completely. I don't have so much of a problem with the old man crying and being like, did I live a good life with the flag? Again, I understand the themes that they're trying to push down your throat. It's a little, again, to me, it's a little like, we already get it from just the context of watching a movie. I think it's a little like, hey, you get it, dummy. Hey, you get it, dummy. And I don't really need that. But I also think that, like Alex said, this is a pre 9/11 movie. I think our, like, ultra patriotism bullshit, zingoistic crap that we do now, it kind of ruins any, like, genuine, like, patriotic thought about the past. And that's not really this movie's fault. It's kind of how fucking right wing psychopaths have bastardized what it means to actually like your country. So I don't know. I wouldn't know. I hate America. So there's that. Gogs.
Great Satan has been liberated.
That's right.
My favorite line from Ultimates 2.
It's going to be a 9 for me. It'd be a 10 if it didn't have the wraparound, if it didn't have the grabbing the knees and crying. Everything else is, I wouldn't cut.
Well, cut those good. Things. The I way you were cut. Saying how it falls apart at the end. I was like, oh, God's going to give it a lower score. Nine.
No, it's
yeah, still it's pretty good. Still,
yeah, I thought you were gonna, like, I thought you were getting like 6-7 territory.
No, no. Like those are just like. I guess what really upsets me is that those choices are so blatantly bad compared yeah. to the rest of the film, where every choice seemed like the perfect way to do it. Like
maybe he let his kid edit for a day. He's like, hey, you want to edit?
Maybe let George Lucas take a swing. They're boys.
Yeah.
George,
yeah, he let Lucas
punch this up a little bit.
Oh yeah, George, he freshened himself up on Saving Private Ryan when he was working on getting ready to work on The Phantom Menace.
George Lucas's fucking Saving Private Ryan is just that's an alternate universe. I need to go see what the fuck that would look like.
But it also loses a point because it says Saving Private Ryan in the movie. You can't do that.
Yeah,
but that's true. It's I'm just saying things everybody's already said. It's beautifully shot. The acting is top tier. The direction is impeccable. The amount of work and logistics it took to put some of this together is probably unimaginable. Like, it's a triumph. It is just an amazing war movie that tells you about war, but it's not like a John Wayne, like, isn't war great? Like, it is.
It shows how awful it is. Like,
right.
War is the worst.
What's the movie? What's the movie about drug use with Jared Leto, whose name escapes me?
Oh, Lord of War?
No.
The one with the heroin.
Requiem for a Dream.
It's Requiem for a Dream. It's like, I never want to ever be part of this. This is a nightmare. Like this is not a recruiting vehicle.
Not like that video game they made.
Not like the video game they made. But no. It's brilliant. It's really good. Fix those. Give me the GOGS edit where you take those pieces out and it's a 10.
Probably my biggest negative about this movie, I didn't even mention, is the fact that it made everybody in every Call of Duty game want to be a sniper forever.
That's true.
They're all terrible at it. I mean, he's like, this movie's not cool, but he's the coolest character in this movie.
Absolutely. Yeah. Not even a question.
So, next week, so I think Sean already picked
already a movie for next week. Didn't he have a pick? I forgot
what it was. I can't remember what
the link is. The link is Tom Sizemore, and the movie is Bringing Out the Dead.
Oh, yeah, okay. I'll put that on the Plex.
All right.
Well, that is the show, everybody. You know what to do. Eat your own ass. Root for the Commanders.
Hopefully Commanders.
Hopefully next week I'll be very happy because they'll be in the divisional round, but we will see.
Hopefully, by the time we record next week, hopefully both of Baltimore, us will be in championship round.
Oh, can you imagine? God, that'd be so great. All right, everybody, that's the show. We'll talk to you later. You know what to do. Eat that ass, especially if it's your own.
Hey,
later, dudes.
Bye, guys.